Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, it looks like we've done it. It looks like George W. Bush has invaded Iran. Welcome to the program, by the way. 6.04 a.m., U.S.-led forces storm Iranian mission in Iraq, detain six. If you go to the Secretary of State's office website, Secretary of State website, the Vienna Convention on Consular Relations and Optional Protocols, it says quite clearly that an embassy is a foreign country. And in fact, here's the language, consular premises shall be inviolable. In other words, you cannot violate them. The authorities of the receiving state shall not enter that part of the consular premises which is used exclusively for the purpose of the work of the consular post, except with the consent of the head of the consular post or his designee or the head of the diplomatic mission of the sending state. The consular archives and documents shall be inviolable at all times and wherever they may be. Consular officers shall not be liable to arrest or detention pending trial, except in the case of a grave crime and pursuant to a decision by a competent judicial authority. And yet the news story, U.S. and multinational forces detained six Iranians Thursday in a raid on Tehran's diplomatic mission in the northern city of Erbil. And we're still trying to track down, there are some stories indicating that the Kurds, who are responsible for protecting the Iranian mission in that area, might have even, you know, locked and loaded, pointed their weapons at U.S. soldiers and said no, and we forced them to back down. So we'll be keeping up with that. This, of course, the day after Bush gives his brilliant speech last night. We'll be talking about that throughout the day. In the second hour of our program, David Hogberg is going to be here telling us how liberals are going to make Medicare more expensive. Yeah, right. And Bush warns Congress, or warns the nation, warns Iran, actually. It's interesting. Last night, also, the first confirmation that the aircraft carrier group Stennis is going to the Persian Gulf, not just on a normal rotation to replace the Eisenhower, but to send a message, as it were. Gareth Porter is with us. Gareth Porter is an investigative historian on U.S. national security policy. He's the author of Perils of Dominance, Imbalance of Power, and the Road to War in Vietnam. Gareth Porter, welcome. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Tom. Glad to be here.
The imbalance of power and the road to war in Vietnam, what are the parallels here? What do you see? First of all, what's your take on what you heard last night from Bush?
Well, you know, what strikes me is that Bush is not backing down at all in terms of saying, you know, he's made mistakes. Quite the contrary. I think what this speech does is tell the American people that he is determined to justify himself, and he, you know, I think he realizes that he can't win, but politically he believes it's suicidal to admit that, and therefore he's going to continue to act as though he is on the road to winning.
Which is what LBJ did for years, and what Nixon did for years.
Well, that's exactly right, and so what I point to here in terms of one of the parallels, potentially a dangerous parallel between the current situation and the end of the Vietnam War, is that Henry Kissinger, who has been the leading advisor to both Condi Rice and to George Bush in recent weeks and months, actually did two things at the end of the towards the end of the Vietnam War. First of all, he convinced the U.S. media that Nixon and Kissinger had used the bombing of Hanoi to force the North Vietnamese to sign the Paris Peace Agreement, which, of course, is not what actually happened at all. But they succeeded in presenting what they did as a victory. And then, on the eve of the actual destruction of the South Vietnamese government, Kissinger basically pushed Gerald Ford into demanding $722 million in emergency military assistance to South Vietnam, the whole point being to try to blame the outcome on Congress because they would refuse, for obvious reasons, to agree to that. So the parallel being that I think that Bush is still hoping that he can maneuver so as to get out of office in 2009 with some kind of shell of a government still in existence, and then blame the final outcome, the final defeat on the next administration or on Congress or a combination of the two.
So in other words, this so-called surge, which is actually an escalation, I mean, even the Bush administration folks are saying this is at least 18 months, it might be multiple years of increased, this so-called surge is purely a political ploy. It's going to make it because there probably will be a negotiated outcome, and when that happens, they'll be able to say, "Oh, we have the negotiated outcome because we did the surge, not because we followed the Baker recommendations or because our system was failing."
I think you're exactly right up to the point about the negotiated outcome. I don't think at this point that this administration thinks in terms of a negotiated outcome at all.
So they're going to have a war with Iran?
Well, I think that's certainly a possibility, although at this point, as long as we are in Iraq, I think it's a very distant one. But I think that he wants to hold on. I think you're absolutely right. This surge, so-called, is going to last another 2 years until he's out of office. And, in fact, his new military commander, the one that he handpicked in Baghdad, the one who is the overall commander of U.S. troops now, has said that this will be 2 or 3 years before the United States can make any progress. So, you know, you can do the math yourself. That's going to be after Bush is out of office.
Right. And if Congress starts cutting off his funding, he can blame the whole thing on Congress the way that Kissinger helped Gerry Ford set it up so that, it would look like Congress cut off the funding and ended the Vietnam War.
I'm convinced that that is what Kissinger has been whispering in George Bush's ear, yes.
Wow.
And I do believe, by the way, that not only will this fail, but I think that fighting the Mahdi army of Muqtada al-Sadr, which is clearly envisioned now by Bush and the people in Baghdad that he has picked to be commanders of U.S. forces, is a recipe for not just much higher U.S. casualties, but for a complete political military disaster in Baghdad, which is probably going to result in a much faster pressure for the U.S. to get out completely.
Yeah, a much faster meltdown, or perhaps a faster ethnic cleansing of the region, which would make the Balkanization of it, the Joe Biden plan, actually more viable, although, tragically, I mean, at an enormous cost of blood.
I think that's a very distinct possibility, that it will, in fact, accelerate ethnic cleansing, yes.
So we have by and large, Shia government, headed up by a Shiite, al-Maliki, who derives a good chunk of their power from Muqtada al-Sadr, who controls about 30% of the votes in parliament, directly or indirectly, and has the largest armed force in the country, about the same size as the U.S. Army, about 130,000,
140,000 men? How many soldiers he has loyal to him, but it is a very large number, that is for sure.
Right, so we're going to try, and ironically, by the way, it was al-Sadr's men who killed Cindy Sheehan's son, Casey Sheehan. So we're going to say to the guy who controls roughly a third of the voting bloc of the Shia, the majority party, the majority group in not party, but the majority religion or ethnic, whatever you want to call it, in Iraq. We're going to say, no, you're out of here. And that this is going to be perceived by the Shia as our tilting in the favor of the Sunnis. At the same time, the Sunnis are convinced that we're totally against them. We just executed Saddam Hussein, who was their patron, And they're not taking, I mean, you know, Anbar province, they're not taking anything back. We're making everybody hate us even more. Now we get the Kurds upset with us because we went into Kurdistan and tried to kidnapped five Iranian diplomats.
But that is absolutely right. In fact, I would go even further and say that what Bush and Condi Rice have done now in this stupid raid against Iranian diplomats in Kurdistan is to really put the United States directly at odds with the president of Iraq, that is Talabani, who is a Kurd who is on very good terms with Iran, which explains why, as you say, the Kurdish guards undoubtedly were very much opposed to and tried to prevent the United States from that raid against Iranian diplomats.
Amazing. Gareth Porter, investigative historian, his book The Perils of Dominance, Imbalance of Power and the Road to War in Vietnam. Gareth, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Talk radio for the rest of us. We'll be right back.
Don't think of buying from Canada. Oh, we will not play nice. We wrote fun legislation forcing the nation to pay the top price. Oh, Grandma, sign the paper. Grandpa, don't be slow. Yes, you get Medicaid soon if you join our HMO.
Yes, the wonders of the Medicare donut hole. Welcome back. Exposing the con and conservative. Tom Hartman here with you, 22 minutes past the hour. George Bush's speech last night raises a really interesting question. Have the insurgents acquired missiles? Listen to this.
Succeeding in Iraq also requires defending its territorial integrity and stabilizing the region in the face of extremist challenges.
See, this is a setup for broadening this war. Here, Bush continues.
This begins with addressing Iran and Syria.
Bingo.
These two regimes are allowing terrorists and insurgents to use their territory to move in and out of Iraq.
Now, where have we heard this before? We're in Afghanistan. We need to go into Iraq, maybe?
Iran is providing material support for attacks on American troops.
Or did we hear this about Cambodia and Laos when we were in Vietnam?
We will disrupt the attacks on our forces. We will interrupt the flow of support from Iran and Syria. And we will seek out and destroy the networks providing advanced weaponry and training to our enemies in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
We're also taking other steps to bolster the security of Iraq and protect American interests in the Middle East.
Now, that's and protect American interests in the Middle East. In other words, this is more than just Iraq.
I recently ordered the deployment of an additional carrier strike group to the region.
Now, this, I've on a couple of occasions here, have asked members of Congress, okay, he's got the Stennis going. Is it adding to the Eisenhower that's already there, or is it just a rotation? And everybody's been saying, oh, it's just a rotation. That's not what I heard George Bush say last night.
We will expand intelligence sharing and deploy Patriot Air Defense Systems to reassure our friends and allies.
Patriot Air Defense Systems? There's nobody in Iraq who has any kind of weaponry that you'd need to use a Patriot Air Defense System against, which means that he is preparing to fight a war against a country other than Iraq.
We will work with the governments of Turkey and Iraq to help them resolve problems along their border.
Now, that's code for the Kurds, which might be particularly Turkey, which might be why the whole issue with, you know, invading Kurdistan, northern Iraq, and taking Iranian diplomats in violation of international law this morning so upset the Kurds.
And we will work with others to prevent Iran from gaining nuclear weapons and dominating the region.
Mm-hmm. And dominating the region is the magic part there. John in Los Angeles on the line. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Good morning, Tom. I was watching this speech last night, and the points that you're bringing up about him, he constantly mentioned Iran and Syria throughout that speech. And
yeah, mention of Osama bin Laden, by the way.
Oh, no. And I told my wife, I said, you watch. This guy's already planning to do something real quick here. And they're saying, you know, you guys are saying March, which would have been the best time if he was going to do it. So not only did he not listen to that, he's going to go ahead and invade the embassy, which is by doing that, I think he's declared war on Iran already.
Yeah, well, you could argue that he has, and Iran may well argue that. It's going to be interesting to see if they bring this to the United Nations. It's so far, it's getting very, very little coverage in the media.
I mean, well, question is, how can he go ahead and do this without consulting Congress? I mean, I know he did it with Iraq because he had all the Republicans there that were backing him up and said, go ahead. But now you got the Democrats in charge.
How can he tap our phones when the law says he can't? How can he read our emails when the law says he can't? How can he gather all this? You know, there's a whole bunch of how cans, John. The answer is he can't. What he is doing is wrong. What he is doing is possibly criminal, certainly impeachable.
Well, this is definitely parallel to what Hitler did towards the end of World War II with Russia.
Well, I'd say it's closer to what he did early on with Poland. You know, where after the Anschluss in Austria, which you could compare that to Iraq, I suppose, if you wanted, or Afghanistan, then he starts, you know, well, it took about a year, and public sentiment was starting to cool down, and Hitler needed another war. And so he started going, these Poles, they've got weapons of mass destruction right across the border, and they're shooting at us. Look at this, and they're moving terrorists into our country, and so we've got to invade Poland. He was making it all up. But it was, you know, it's his rationale to invade Poland.
He's out of control. I mean, something's got to be done. There's no, I can't see this happening much more.
Yeah, it is downright spooky and scary. John, thank you for the call. Karen in Kentucky. Hey, Karen, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Look, I never call into these radio programs, but I listen a lot. And I like to know why we as a people cannot take a vote to get him out for him being incompetent. He's insane.
Because we don't have a parliamentary system like they do in England where you know.
So can we bring it up to, like, the legislators or the House and the Congress or have them to, I mean, they vote on everything else. They vote on alcohol. They vote on this. They vote on that. But we can't vote to get him out?
Well, no, you can't. But what we can do is we can have him impeached.
But that's going to take a long time. And Nancy can't do it because she's third in line. So what are they going to do? It'll take another 2 years and he's going to keep doing what he's doing.
Well, actually, I think it could be done very quickly if they were to have hearings and get evidence that this guy has committed serious crimes, and, you know, impeachment could be a fairly fast process. Although, you know, I tend to agree with your skepticism about whether it's going to happen, Karen. I think the main thing we need to do is just be waking up as many Americans as possible. Thank you for calling, though, and I appreciate your passion and calling into the program. 27 minutes past the hour.
Day by day, I hear the voices rising, starting with a whisper, like it did before. Day by day, we count the dead and dying, ship the bodies home, while an inward talk keeps going. Did you hear him talking about it on the radio?
And welcome back to the place where progressives fiendishly plot for world peace. AmericaSaysNo.org. Win Without War, The True Majority Action, The Coalition of Groups. Just check it out, AmericaSaysNo.org. No more troops. Let's deliver an immediate and direct response to the president's call for escalation of the Iraq war. No. People in cities all over the United States tonight are going to be out on the streets. Here in the Portland area, there's at least a dozen of these things happening. They're happening all over the country, where people are just going to, you know, whether they're standing on the corner holding signs or whether they're in here in Oregon in the state capitol in Salem at 5 o'clock, people are going to be standing there. They're all over the country. This stuff is going on. You can find out where the one nearest to you is by going to AmericaSaysNo.org and check it out. I mean, this is this crazed speech last night. This war speech. Not a single word in there about diplomacy. He talked about the Baker Commission, the Iraq study group, which recommended that he talk with Iran and Syria. The way he referenced them was as if he was following, as if they were endorsing what he was doing, which absolutely is not the case. And then he's going to, we're going to be bipartisan, right? We're going to bring in,
acting on the good advice of Senator Joe Lieberman and other key members of Congress, we will form a new bipartisan working group that will help us come together across party lines to win the war on terror.
Yeah, like this is the war on terror? I'm sorry, this is a war on Iraq. It's not even a war, it's an occupation. It's a war on against people who don't want their country to be occupied. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number. Reed in San Francisco. Hey, Reed.
Oh, hey, Tom. I just wanted to point out something that I saw in the San Francisco Chronicle today. Conservative radio station KSFO, which has people like Melanie Morgan and hosts like Brian Sussman, is coming down on a blogger because there's a blogger named Spocko in the San Francisco Bay Area who posts audio clips of some of the more hateful things and has written advertisers. And all he has said is, do you really want to advertise with these people? And big corporations, MasterCard, Bank of America, and others, after listening to this, have pulled their advertising. So now ABC has gone after him and has demanded that they've had lawyers come in, they've made him pull his clips off the air.
Right, they didn't make him do it. They threatened and he chose
right.
to do it. I'm assuming he doesn't have the money to litigate this thing.
It's a violation of fair use. Yeah.
Yeah, and they claim that he's in violation of fair use. I think that's arguable. I played a clip of that yesterday on this program.
Yes, you did.
So
right.
So, anyway, and, yeah. So you just wanted to put that out as a heads up to folks?
Well, right, because tomorrow KSFO, apparently they're very, you know, they're concerned about this. They're preempting an hour tomorrow, I think at noon, for people to call in and comment on this.
Okay.
And I think that people need to. Also, I just wanted to point out some hypocrisy by Melanie Morgan.
Yeah, well, Reed, actually, I'm going to stop this right here. Because, number one, I don't want to get into the politics of local radio. And number two, I don't want to be promoting, even if it's by dissing, frankly, a conservative radio station. But, you know, good on you for getting out there and being an activist about it. Paul in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Paul. Paul?
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Tom.
Yeah.
This is Paul.
Yes, you're on the air, Paul. What's up?
Okay, I'm on my way up to Atlanta. I got to get on one of our 27s up here. Man, I'm glad you're on the air. I heard that you were going to be off the air, you know, that something was, you know, they were taking you off or something like that.
No.
I'm here to live in daylight out of me.
No, nobody told me that.
Oh, man, thank God for that.
We've been here 3.5 years. I intend to keep right on going.
Oh, man, so, I tell you, that scared me to no end. You know?
Yeah, so what's up, Paul?
Hey, listen, you know that White House switchboard?
Yes.
Me and a bunch of my pilot buddies were calling up the government switchboard and getting a hold of these various people and telling them what we thought of them prior to last election and that we're watching them. Tom, they changed the phone number of that White House switchboard.
You mean the toll-free number?
Yeah, I don't know. I called them. They said it's disconnected. I guess we're
Yeah. Well, you've got to call the regular number, the 202 number. The toll free numbers actually are not paid for by the government. What happens, Paul, is different organizations, you know, from the NRA to the True Majority, you know, they've gotten by toll free numbers because it costs about 4 cents a minute to have a toll-free number ring in on top of a number, and you can specify the number it's going to ring in on top of, and they'll have them ring in on top of the White House or the Congress, and then they'll send it out to their members. So probably that membership organization just said, no, not going to do it. Judy in Eugene, Oregon, listening on KOPT. Hey, Judy.
Oh, hi. This is Judy. Yeah, I wanted to talk about what I call the elephant in the living room. I just feel like Americans really do have an option, and it's just not being talked about. I think that there are enough of us that we can meet in Washington, D.C. by the millions and march into the White House and occupy the Oval Office and disrupt everything and demand that Bush step down and take his cabinet with him.
Well,
and,
the Bonus Army, do you remember the story of the Bonus Army back during Hoover's day?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, Herbert Hoover was president, as I recall. And this was after World War I, obviously. And the things times were tough, and the World War I veterans had been promised a bonus, and the bonus was supposed to be paid to them, like I think in the early 1930s or something like that. And they wanted it early because the Depression was cranking up. And so they camped out. They marched on Washington, D.C. They created this huge camp outside the White House all the way down to the Potomac, going tens of thousands of people. It was referred to as the Bonus Army. And MacArthur and Eisenhower rode in on horseback and burned them out. And Herbert Hoover, many suggest that's, you know, perhaps one of the reasons why he lost the election, if I'm remembering my history right. But the point is that Washington, D.C. has been marched on many times. Nobody's ever tried to take the White House other than when the Canadians and the English did in the War of 1812. But, you're not going to get inside the White House. And I think it's a fine idea to stand up and make that protest and make that march. And I think that all of us doing it all across the United States right now, in Eugene, there's probably something going on tonight that you should go to, Judy.
Well, but that's the problem. That's what we've been doing all along. All these years, we've been marching. I've been doing this. We've all been calling. We've all been writing. We've all been, you know, protesting. But the ones, and they can ignore it.
They can, but not forever.
I think they will. I mean, we're at this point, and George Bush is still walking forward. And you said on your show, I don't remember which one it was, but you were talking about how the people in Germany never found a defining moment to just step up and say no more. And I think this is the defining moment. This is the time. And why can't we walk in to the White House? And yes, there will be police, and yes, there will be troops. But
they will stop you, and they will put you in jail.
Yes, they will, and we'll go to jail. But can they put a million of us in jail? Tom, we really have to start saying yes, there are options, and saying it out loud.
I agree with you, Judy.
Maybe
I agree with you.
People in Congress will finally say, okay.
There is going to be a massive march. There is. Tonight are the demonstrations all across the United States. And on, I believe it's the 27th, it's that Saturday, the last Saturday of January, there's going to be a massive march in Washington, D.C. demanding peace. And that's the time and place to do it. So Judy,
I will be there.
Yeah, your march is...
I don't think it's going to work. I think they're going to totally ignore us, just like the media has done before.
Well,
so we have to really consider that we've got to go farther and actually put our lives at risk instead of just assuming that.
Or like Martin Luther King did, a passive nonviolent resistance, and just say that's it.
Yes, exactly.
Judy, thank you for the call. Yes, there are so many of us who are so concerned about this. It's. John in New York City. John, you want to disagree with me?
Yeah, you know what? I was telling you, call screen. I've never voted for Republican. Never. I disagreed with Bush. I thought he lied about the war initially, the weapons of mass destruction. But in this case, I got to agree with what he's doing, and I'll tell you why. It's because I think that if we walk away, that's a dangerous precedent to set, because I think we're leaving them holding the bag. And they're right. I mean, if we...
Who's
if we
the them out, that we're leaving holding the bag, John?
The Iraqi people. I mean, we went in there, we took out their leadership, okay? And then there was a celebration, and then came anarchy.
But the majority of the Iraqi people don't want us there. Over 90% of the Iraqi people don't want us there.
I don't know if they do or don't. I mean, I can't say. I can tell you
they don't. There have been surveys done, by the Iraqi government itself that say that they don't want us there.
Let me finish. You know this for a fact because you heard it from their mouth or you got it from a report. I mean, I don't know.
I know it for a fact because they're shooting at us.
Well, look, I'm a Democrat, so I tell you, I never voted for a Republican before. But I just think that we can't.
Do you think they're shooting at us because they're so happy that we're there?
Look, I don't want to see no more people die either, especially Americans.
Then don't send any more soldiers in there, John. It's just real simple. If you don't want to see any more people die, don't send more soldiers in. You can't have a military solution to a mess like this, where you've got different ethnicities, you've got 150 different tribes, you've got 30 major tribal groups in two primary, the Shia and the Sunni, and they're all at each other, and we're going to go in and sort it out. No, it ain't going to happen. 45 minutes past the hour.
Freedom in Afghanistan, say goodbye Taliban. Free elections in Iraq, Saddam Hussein locked up. Thomas in underground, Al-Qaeda now is finding out America won't turn and run once the fighting has begun. Libya turns over news, Lebanese won't freedom to Syria's forced to leave. Don't you know that all this means Bush was right.
Remember this?
Bush was right.
Remember when these guys were singing this? Turn it back up, Andrew.
Can Kennedy wrong? Can you see I'm wrong? France wrong? Now Miller right.
Oh, yeah. Remember when all the right-wing radio stations, this is like a year and a half, 2 years ago, all the right-wingers were playing that song? Yeah, all this, all these things, this is all just so wonderful. Everything's just turned out just fine, hasn't it? Yeah. Yeah, it's just turned out just fine. 1-866-440-8466. Fred and Pinion. How do you pronounce that, Fred, in New York there?
Pinyan.
Pinyan. Thank you very much.
Pennsylvania Yankee. I'm a liberal living in the heart of conservatives. I'm a guy that's lived all over the world. So I bring a perspective. I've lived in foreign countries. I've had the perspective of how the U.S. is viewed in foreign countries. But I also, what I'm going to talk to you about is personal information. You know, a lot of the troops, you know, this is a depressed area economically. And so for that reason, a lot of the troops come from here. A lot of the kids have no chance for jobs and work.
Right.
So they are prime candidates. They're only real out. A lot of good kids, including my nephew, are have really no out because of the economics to choose a military option.
Yeah, I know this is an increasing tragedy for the United States. It's working just fine for the cons, but it's a tragedy for the United States.
I deal with the troops on an economic basis every day. I sell automobiles, so yeah. I deal with guys that are coming back, and one of the first things they want to do is buy an automobile. I get a lot of information, direct information from people that were just over there, believe it or not, being in a little remote place. And one of the things that is a reoccurring thing amongst all the troops that keeps coming up is that the Iraqis are our friends in the day. And most of the troops, I don't know if this is real or not, I'm not there, but I my sense of it, I'm pretty good with people. But like I said, I've lived in a lot of places, and I'm pretty good about people. And what I'm getting from what the troops are saying to me is that the Iraqis are friendly by day. All the troops want to say, yes, we're it's not all bad, we're doing some good. But when the lights go out at night, money exchanges hands, and these people who are our friends in the day will shoot at us at night.
Sure. Well, we're occupying their country. I mean, what can we expect? I mean, it makes perfect sense. Fred, thank you very much. Ray in Bellingham, Washington. Hey, Ray.
Oh, yes, Tom. Can you hear me?
I can, but it'd be better if you took us off the speakerphone.
I'm on my Bluetooth. Is that all right?
If it's quick, Ray, what's up?
Well, no. Have you read the latest article in the editor's letter in Vanity Fair?
I have not. No.
It's fantastic. It's about the book that this lady wrote. Accidental candidate, Gail Sheehy, wrote about a portrait.
This is about how Bush's childhood set him up to be an incompetent president?
Right, how he used to swear and throw clubs, and he was a terrible loser, and he'd make people play in the snow in tennis just so he could win a set.
Yeah,
and
interesting.
He's just terrible. He's just a terrible loser.
Yeah, Ray, I'm going to have to check it out. And I got to thank you for calling, but the audio on that, the quality on that phone is just awful. Jeff in Tacoma. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Tom. I want to thank you for being one of the few progressive hosts to encourage people to call their legislators. This is the most important thing, in my opinion, that media figures can do, because it's how we make things happen. I just
Amen.
Called Senator Murray's office.
By the way, here's a toll-free number that you can call your legislators at, 888-355-3588.
Right on.
Go ahead.
I just called both my senators, Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell, and the guy at Senator Murray's office had a total neocon view of what the solution was. Basically, he thought that we were authorized to invade any country we want. because I said, you know, are you aware that we just invaded Iranian sovereign territory? And he, you know, he seemed to think that was just fine. So part of the thing we can do is not just educating our representatives about what we want, but also educating their staff
yeah.
who have their ear and actually, you know, probably are manipulating them in some way just because they don't know any better.
Well, excellent point, Jeff, and thank you for making it, and thanks for the call. Ian in San, and for calling your member of Congress. That's great. Ian in San Francisco. Hey, Ian.
Hey, Tom. How you doing? Listen, you know, there's impeachable crimes, you know, the high crimes and misdemeanors and,
right.
And all that. And so we know that's one way to get it. But, you know, there could be a time, and it seems like we may have that on our doorstep, where you have a president who's just crazy. Now, if you have one who is crazy, what does the Constitution provide? I mean, can hearings be held to find out whether he's nuts? I mean, like they say,
This is Section 4 of Article 2 of the Constitution, which is about the president. Article 2 covers the presidency. The president, vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Period. End of sentence. That's pretty much it.
So in other words, if he is, let's say he's crazy.
Yeah.
Because he keeps doing the same thing over and over again, expecting to get a different result.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess you just have to just impeach him.
I guess so. Frankly, I think, you know, my opinion, Ian, is that George W. Bush has committed high crimes and misdemeanors that are worthy of impeachment. And therefore, you know, we're going to have congressional investigations to prove that. And that's going to take, you know, a few weeks, maybe a few months, but probably not more, frankly. And I think that if these guys really get wound up, we ought to get John Conyers on and ask him about this. These guys get really wound up. I think that they could probably have articles of impeachment together within the next 3 or 4 months and possibly even have him out of office by summer. And then we would, you know, it's a year and a half of fewer deaths here in the United States, or in Iraq, of Americans and other people all around the world. 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Victory will not look like the ones our fathers and grandfathers achieved. There will be no surrender ceremony on the deck of a battleship.
That's because it's not going to be a victory. I mean, here you have welcome back to the program, by the way. Tom Hartman here with you. Here you have a nation that is largely comprised of three ethnic groups, the Kurds in the north, who really just, you know, want to have their own independent Kurdistan. And by the way, they'd like a piece of Turkey to go along with it because there's a bunch of Kurds in Turkey that are being oppressed by the Turks. You've got the Shia in the south and scattered around the country. And you've got the Sunnis in the center. And particularly in Anbar province and, you know, Saddam's hometown or home area. And the Saudis have said if the Sunnis are under attack, if it's their perception that the Sunnis are at risk, that they will invade. They're going to take a piece of the action. The King of Jordan has talked about the possibility of having to go in. From, as I recall, I don't have a map of the area in front of me, but I think that would be from the southeast. King of Jordan has talked about, you know, having to go in and take lock down a piece of Iraq. We have the Shia, who arguably control the government. They are certainly a majority of people in the country. And they've, you know, broken up into factions. I mean, keep in mind, there's 150 different tribes in Iraq. There's 30 major tribal groups. You have this incredibly complex situation. where if you're hiring police or army in one area and you move them into another tribal area and they kill somebody, now you've got an honor killing, now you've got reprisal that's necessary. Or, hey, these guys have been traditionally our enemies, and now I've got a gun, I can just kill them. So old scores are being settled. We're saying, Bush is saying last night, that we're going to move all these soldiers, we're going to, you know, another, what, 20-some-odd thousand soldiers, well, we'll see how many, but that he's, first of all, that he's it's already in process. Like, he doesn't need any help from Congress. He doesn't need any authorization from Congress. It's a done deal. He got rid of the generals who disagreed with him. And boom, in he goes. And so Congress is going to be presented with this, with a done deal. And a piece of this deal is that he's going to try and disarm the Mehdi army. You know, Muqtada al-Sadr's army. I mean, here's Muqtada al-Sadr. Here's this guy whose father, I mean, you know, they named Sadr City after a large chunk of Baghdad. Father, one of the martyrs killed by Saddam Hussein in the Shia-Sunni competition, whatever you want to call it. Sadr, ironically, the guy whose Mehdi army, back, what, 3 years ago when Bush said, okay, that's it, we're going to... Remember when Bush put us a bounty on Sadr's head? Said, we're going to take this guy out? This young cleric, this firebrand cleric? And so they sent a bunch of soldiers in there, and one of them was Casey Sheehan. He and five other guys died that day. And then Bush said, oh, well, okay, we're not going to do that. And then we're going to have elections instead. So they have the elections, and Sadr gets like a third of the vote. So here's a guy who represents one of the largest blocs among the Shia, who has an armed militia that may be larger than the entire U.S. military force in Iraq, and we're going to try and disarm him? And he represents 30% of the government, and we're helping the government? I mean, do you have any sense of how complicated, what an incredible mess this is? Joe Biden put together a year ago. Joe Biden actually there's been a series of Democratic proposals. But I thought Biden's made a lot of sense. That we simply say, okay, it's three countries. And frankly, you know, it's Kurdistan in the north and Shia land in the south and Sunni land in the center. And there's a whole bunch of oil, mostly in the Shia areas. And all three of them are going to have to share the revenue from the oil. Split it up on a per capita basis. So they're not going to be fighting over oil. And we'll provide, you know, the funds for the ethnic cleansing, as it were, for the relocation, so that it can be done in a reasonable and I'm not quoting Joe Biden here. This is just broad concept. So it can be done in a reasonable and orderly fashion, rather than by assassinating people. I mean, right now you have 100 people a day, more or less, being executed as part of the ethnic cleansing that's going on just in Baghdad. So just, you know, the British created this country out of nothing. These were three provinces in the Ottoman Empire at the end of World War I. And after World War I, when the British seized that area, they said, okay, we're going to jam these three provinces together, and we're going to call it Iraq. Let's go back to it being three provinces. But the problem with that, from Bush's point of view, is that he's not going to get control of the oil. He's not going to get control of the power in the region. He's not, because he's incapable of considering the possibility that maybe the thing that should have been done over the last 5 years of his presidency was moving America away from dependency on foreign oil instead of toward it. If we had taken the hundreds of billions of dollars that we have spent in Iraq and instead bought solar panels and put them on people's roofs all across America and hooked them up to meters and fed power back into the power grid, and said to the auto companies in the United States, you know, you've got to kick up your average fleet mileage, your CAFE standards by 5 miles per gallon, and maybe cut back on speed limits in some place. I mean, you know, we could have cut in half the amount of oil that we're importing from the Middle East with an aggressive program that would have cost a whole lot less than it cost us to go into Baghdad, to go into Iraq. But we're there now. So what do we do? I agree with the Democrats who are suggesting that it is time, and Republicans, I mean, Chuck Hagel saying this, you know, who wants to be president. Gordon Smith saying it enough. Our soldiers have bullseyes on their back. Let's not put more bullseyes in there. The Iraqi people don't want us in there. And you know, Bush saying, oh, no, we've got a new strategy. It's going to work when the previous one didn't.
This new strategy will not yield an immediate end to suicide bombings, assassinations, or IED attacks.
No.
Our enemies in Iraq will make every effort to ensure that our television screens are filled with images of death and suffering.
Now, you get that? Listen to the framing of this. Our enemies in Iraq. We're talking about the people of Iraq. Remember, when we invaded Iraq, there was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq because Al-Qaeda was a religious Sunni organization and Saddam Hussein was a secular Sunni. And he wanted to have nothing to do with the religious zealots who were trying to take over his part of the religion. Anytime anybody in Iraq said the word Al-Qaeda, Saddam Hussein would throw their butts in jail. So our enemy has become the people of Iraq themselves. And to the extent that there's an Al-Qaeda there, of course, it's the Sunnis who, you know, are saying, all right, Saddam Hussein is dead. He's not going to defend us. He's not going to protect us. The Shia are going to massacre us because, you know, that's been going on for 1,400 years. So we need to align ourselves with somebody. There's that Osama bin Laden guy out there. Of course, George didn't mention him in his speech last night. Anyway, he continues.
Yet over time, we can expect to see Iraqi troops chasing down murderers.
Murderers. It would be nice to have police go after murderers. You want to have troops engaged in what? Defending the country, pulling the country together? I mean, doesn't he get it? Armies don't do police work? Or is murderers a way of saying, you know, average Iraqis who don't want us in their country anymore, thank you very much. I'll share a few more clips from this, and we'll be taking your calls right after the break. 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here, the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. And I got a couple of new numbers for Congress. I'll give you one when we come right back.
Well, I was born in a small town, and I need a small town.
And welcome back to the place where smart people get their news. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 21 minutes past the hour. 1-866-440-8466, our number if you'd like to drop into our live chat room. Go to TomHartman.com. Two phone numbers for Congress, two toll-free numbers we've just confirmed. The one I gave out earlier looks like it's been disconnected. Actually, let me just give you one of these so it's easy to remember. 866. This is if you want to call your member of Congress. Each one of us has one member of the House of Representatives and two senators. Every state has two senators. They represent everybody in the state, so you have two senators. And then each one of us lives in a congressional district. We have a single member of the House of Representatives who represents us. So there's three people you can call. on this toll-free number. It gets you to the switchboard on Capitol Hill, and then you can just say, please connect me to the office of so-and-so. And if you're not sure who represents you, and a lot of people, they just don't know who represents them in the House of Representatives. They may not, you may not even know who your senators are. Just ask. You call this number and you say, I'm not sure who my senators are. I live in Oklahoma. Please tell me. Or I'm not sure who represents me, but my zip code is 97239. And they'll look it up and say, well, it looks like you're represented by Earl Blumenauer or Darlene Hooley or whoever it is. And so anyhow, the number toll-free, 866-220-0044. 866-220-0044. Mina in St. Paul, Nebraska. Hey, Mina, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm a member of Central Nebraska Peace Workers and Nebraskans for Peace, and our closest vigil is 120 miles away.
Ouch.
So we're suggesting that those who can't make it to a vigil tonight at 6 o'clock, put a candle in your window to show support for bringing the troops home and not sending more troops over.
That is a great suggestion, Mina. Great suggestion. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Steve in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Tom. I got a couple points I want to make real quick. The first one's real quick. The second one's a little longer, so I'll make the first one real fast. Regarding the FISA court, the law from 1978,
yeah.
One thing that people are constantly overlooking here, and I remember hearing this several years ago, is that whenever they talk about the FISA courts, they're like, they always grant the request, and then they only denied like two or three FISA requests.
Yeah, well, it was actually in the teens, I think. But yeah.
I'm sorry?
It was actually in the teens, I think. It was 17 or something like that.
Okay,
but in any case.
I recall that one of those denials was Zacharias Massawi's computer.
I don't know if that's the case or not.
Okay. People can research that.
It sounds like the sort of thing that you'd hear at Fox News.
Actually, I recall that from several years ago. People can research it themselves. I don't have a computer, so I can't research it at home.
Okay.
Anyway, the second point is regarding impeachment.
The fact of the matter is that they could have looked at his computer over a three-day period before they went to the court. And actually, it couldn't have been his computer. That had to have been a right-wing talking point because the FISA court authorizations are for wiretapping telephones. It's got nothing to do with looking at somebody's computer.
What about wiretapping his emails?
I don't believe that you need a FISA court authorization for that.
Okay. Well, anyway, if that turns out to be true that Musawi's FISA request was denied, then the question is why was it denied? Who denied it? John Ashcroft was the AG at the time, and people can investigate. But regarding impeachment...
Yeah, actually, that could lead to a very nice conspiracy theory, if you want.
Yeah, so people...
I just don't know, frankly.
Okay, well, I want to get it out there.
Yeah.
And but regarding impeachment, you got to start with Cheney.
I think actually you start below that. John Dean had a piece on Find Law a while ago in which he suggested that you start with people, like with the plumbers and, during Watergate. You start at the bottom and you work your way up and you get the low-level people, the Scooter Libbies, and then they roll over on the people above them and then they roll over on the people above them. And then finally you've got three or four people who've rolled over on the president.
Yeah, perhaps that's what Fitzgerald is doing.
Yeah, well, who knows? I mean, yeah. Fitzgerald is a good Republican. He's been certainly taking his sweet time. I think it's what Fitzgerald is not doing. I think it's what he's pretending to be doing.
Well, there's an urgency to it because, my opinion is that really Cheney or other people in the government sort of let 9/11 happen, and we just can't take that risk anymore. We really have to get these guys out of there. It's really
I spot on, Steve. I agree with you, and I also agree with you that they let this happen. They had so many warnings that 9/11 was coming that they chose to ignore. Question is, why did they let it happen? I frankly don't know the answer to that. I have my own suspicions. But Tom in San Francisco. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Good.
Listen, I smell the blood of Karl Rove behind all this.
Or the fingerprints or whatever,
well,
yeah.
What struck me last night was that this is more of a political, the search is more of a political maneuver than it is a military one.
I agree.
In that they have seized the initiative, and they are now dominating the conversation.
That's
and
right.
They are diverting attention from the past failures of the war and the high crime.
No, you're absolutely right, and it's a point that I thought I was making when I opened the show an hour and a half ago. Is that this is not, this makes no sense at all militarily, and Bush is gonna, what he's gonna do is he's eventually it's gonna work out, or he's gonna hand it off to somebody else, and in either case, to the extent that, it may work out, he'll point back at this and say, see, that's where it works. Or if Congress shuts it down, he'll say, see, it's their fault. It's his way of avoiding blame. 27 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
There's a dark and the troubled side of life. There's a bright and a sunny side too. Though we meet with the darkness and strife, the sunny side we also may view.
And welcome back, my friends, to the radio support group of, by, and for we, the people of the United States of America, of the planet, for all living things on planet Earth, in fact. Kate in Tacoma, Washington, points out to me, sent a note, what about the 25th Amendment? And I had forgotten about the 25th Amendment. The 25th Amendment was passed back in 1967, or ratified in 67. It was passed by Congress in 65. And it's about what happens if the president becomes, you know, dies, resigns, or becomes incapacitated. Now, step one, of course, would be to successfully prosecute or impeach Cheney, I guess. But, I mean, that's the only... whenever the vice president and a majority of principal officers of the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may by law provide, that's interesting. It starts out by saying if the president's cabinet gets together and writes a letter to the head of the Senate and the head of the House of Representatives saying the president's nuts, the vice president takes over. Here's the exact language. Whenever the vice president and a majority of the principal officers of the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may by law provide. So Congress could even appoint a group of psychiatrists, for example, to examine George W. Bush. Transmit to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. The vice president shall immediately assume the powers and duties of the office as acting president. Thereafter, now what if Bush says, no, wait a minute, I'm not crazy. Thereafter, when the president transmits to the president pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives his written declaration that no inability exists, he shall resume the powers and duties of his office unless the vice president and a majority of either a majority of either the principal officers of the executive department or of such other body as Congress may by law provide transmit within 4 days to the president pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives, turn the page, their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. So the president says to the vice president or the cabinet, says, the president is nuts. Put the vice president in charge. The president says, no, I'm not nuts. So then they've got 4 days to say, yes, you are. And if it comes down to that, thereupon Congress shall decide the issue, assembling within 48 hours for that purpose, if not in session. If the Congress within 21 days after receiving the latter written declaration, that would be saying, yes, you are nuts, or if Congress is not in session within 21 days after Congress is required to assemble, determines by two-thirds vote of both houses that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the vice president shall continue to discharge the same as acting president. Otherwise, the president shall resume the powers and duties of his office. In other words, they've got 21. They have 3 weeks to pull the thing off. It's a stretch. I think impeachment makes more sense. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Chris, listening on the Quake in San Jose, California. Hey, Chris.
Hi. I call because I have this feeling that I'm becoming increasingly desperate to get this guy out of office, and I frankly need some direction. I don't know what to do. I'm crazed. totally it's, afraid.
Yeah, I understand. And there are times when those feelings strike all of us, Chris. What the important thing that we have to do, particularly in times like this, in difficult times like this, and this country has certainly been through times like this in the past, and other countries have had it far worse. I mean, look at what happened in the 30s in Europe, is that we have to convert our emotions, whether they be, you know, rage or anger or fear or a sense of impotence or whatever it may be, that spectrum, that intense spectrum of emotions that comes from seeing, you know, Bush running down the road that nobody wants him to go down on our behalf and in our name, to take those emotions and convert them into action, into positive action, not negative action.
Yeah, that's what I need to know. What do I do?
Step one. Tonight there will be demonstrations all over the United States. Find out where the ones are near you and show up.
Okay.
There's I gave out the website a few minutes ago. I'll have to track it down again. Hang on just a second. I think it was democracyinaction.org or americasaysno.org, and you can just plug your go to americasaysno.org and you can plug in your zip code and it'll tell you where meetings are. MoveOn.org may be doing this as well. I haven't looked at their website, but it wouldn't surprise me. So number one, you know, show up tonight. And if you can't show up, I think our caller's suggestion you put a candle in the window is a great one. Number two, there's going to be a big demonstration in Washington, D.C. the 27th. There's also a conference there the Thursday and Friday before that. I'll be, in fact, broadcasting from there on that Thursday and Friday and do it from a Radio Row from the Families USA Conference. That's the week of the State of the Union address. Show up in Washington, D.C. if you want to, you know, really get out there and do that. Number three, write letters to the editor of your local newspaper. Number four, actually, that should be number four. Number three, call your members of Congress. Call your representative. And call both your senators. And that toll-free number, 866-220-0044, or if you have unlimited free long distance and you want to save one of these organizations the cost of it, you can call Congress directly at 202-225-3121. And let them know. Let them know that you are very concerned about this and that you want a strong and rapid investigation of high crimes and misdemeanors being committed by this administration, with the possibility that if they have done what it sure looks like they're doing, that they should be impeached and removed from office and be replaced by competent people. And, you know, that's a great place to start. And then find local groups. I mean, there are still meetup groups all over the country. There's Democracy for America. DemocracyForAmerica.com is a great group. Howard Dean's brother, Jim Dean, is running that thing. They have local meetings all over the place. It's like a support group. You can get together once a week or once a month, depending on how active it is. Join your local Democratic Party or your local Green Party or your local Republican Party, whatever party you feel, you know, an affinity for. Actually show up at the meetings, start participating. I mean, these are all the things that we can do to take back America. Call talk shows, you know, like you're doing right now. Write letters to the editor of the newspaper. But convert those emotions into action. We all have to become activists. We can't just sit there. You know, democracy is not a spectator sport.
I know. So. I have 8 children, and I've raised 8 voters, and I'm now going to call each and every one of them and tell them that they not just need to vote, they need to do something.
There you go. And that's the last thing that should have been on my list, which is, you know, talk to 10 people. Because if there's a million people listening to me right now and every one of them talks to 10 people, that's 10 million people. And if every one of them talks to 10 people, that's 100 million people. And that's a third of the country. Now, you know, it's a little optimistic to think that everybody's going to do that, but hey, you know, it's got to start someplace. As Margaret Mead said, never doubt that a small group of passionate activist people can change the world. Indeed, that's the only way it's ever happened. I'm doing that from memory. It's not, you know, verbatim, but it's awful close. And that's what we have to do. Chris, thank you for the call in. Good luck.
Thank you. I'm off and running.
Okay, good on you. Okay, Bill in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Bill.
Hello, Tom. Thanks very much for your program today. I wanted to talk a little bit about the president's speech last night. You played a clip of him saying something along the lines of, our enemies in Iraq will fill our TV news with images of death and destruction. And again, that's paraphrasing, much like you did with Margaret Mead.
Yeah.
But you said, well, okay, that means that, you know, well, what it meant to me and what I said as soon as he said that, is, so in other words, anyone in TV showing such images is our enemy.
Right. This is another attempt to demonize the news.
Right.
Basically, any, yeah. And, and the flip side of that is he's also trying to say that all the folks in Iraq who are opposed to us are Al-Qaeda. I mean, get this.
As we make these changes, we will continue to pursue Al-Qaeda and foreign fighters.
See, as if that's who, you know, we're going against. I mean, it's just it's a total reframe that he's trying to do.
The other things he said in there that really scared me were we're going to increase the size of our military. And I thought, okay, everybody, all the poor saps that are in our military right now are going to end up having longer hitches, not getting their leaves. They signed up for 2 or 3 years, and they end up in 5 or 6.
Yeah.
The other thing that scared me was we're going to stop Iran and Syria from supplying the insurgents. And I know that's going to be their excuse for the first incursion over the border there. But what really bothered me through the whole evening, Tom, was that the Democratic response was not carried by all the networks. I happened to catch it on CNBC, and, you know, I flipped around to see who else was doing it, and Fox had the usual set of, you know, the cadre of cons spouting their usual crap.
Right.
And, you know, it was like the president's message was the only one that got to most of the country, and that is just indefensible. You know, I just
it is. I didn't realize that. I watched it on MSNBC, and so I saw the response as well. And Keith, because I wanted to hear what Keith Olbermann had to say about it as well.
Same here, and he and Chris Matthews had a good discussion. They brought in whatever their.
They even had Joe Scarborough. You know, the old right winger.
Well, I don't like mentioning their names. You know, they don't deserve the publicity, but. Even he was a bit skeptical about it. Sure, he was going to, you know.
Well, he's also figured out that Keith Olbermann's ratings are going through the roof, and so I think that Joe's changing his tune. Bill, I gotta take a break here, but thank you for the call, and you're spot on right. And frankly, I think we need to be holding our news media accountable as well. You know, that's another point to add to our list of activism for Chris, the caller before last, is when you hear obviously biased reporting coming out of a television network, radio network, or a local station, call them. Give them hell. 45 minutes past the hour.
Promise people and all people what to do then, no. Go to work in some high rise.
And welcome back for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, my goodness. Jamie in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Jamie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Couple things going on overseas. I don't know how much has been talked about that in Kurdistan, we went into the Iranian consulate last night.
Yes, I opened the show with that about an hour and a half ago. I should have mentioned it again more recently. That is a violation of international law and an act of war.
Yes,
because under the protocols of the what's the thing called? I've got it right here. The Vienna Convention on Consular Relations and Optional Protocols. Under that, it says, quote, consular premises shall be inviolable. I don't know how to, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that word. and the authorities of the receiving state shall not enter that part of the consular premises which is used exclusively for the purpose of the work of the consular post, except with the consent of the head of the consular post or his designee or the head of the diplomatic mission of the sending state. And the consular archives and documents shall be inviolable at all times and wherever they may be, and consular officers shall not be liable to arrest or detention pending trial except in the case of a grave crime and pursuant to a decision by a competent judicial authority. There has been no judicial authority. I'm not sure that you could say that George Bush is competent, but last night we invaded the Syrian embassy, the Iranian embassy up in the Kurdish controlled area of the town of Erbil, and the Kurds are hopping mad about it, the Iranians are hopping mad about it, and I believe it's an act of war.
I think, did they take five people?
They took five or six people out of there who Iran says are diplomats, and they also took computers.
And they broke windows?
And they took down the flag. The Iranian flag is no longer flying there, according to the news reports that I'm reading.
And then earlier this week, we also fired upon Somalia, saying that we were going after the Al-Qaeda.
Yeah,
famous number two.
Yeah.
And they killed 70 people and didn't get anybody.
That's right. And the story that the infamous number two that we said that we were going to get, turned out we didn't get anybody at all. That sort of got buried in the news. That really didn't get mentioned. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
To me, a lot of what last night was about, once again, was pay no attention to what's going on behind the curtain.
Well, that was my point. You know, you'll recall yesterday or the day before I said, when this speech happens, there's going to be a whole lot of waving of the right hand because he wants you to look at it while he's doing something else with the left hand. And what he's going to be doing with the left hand is setting up a war with Iran, in my opinion.
So we have warships now. Do you think that might have to do with why a Navy guy is now in charge of that area? Because we're starting a naval war, too, now, aren't
we? That's right. And not only do we have a naval guy in charge of that area, but we also now have a naval guy in charge of all U.S. intelligence, right? A former admiral. And what's his name? Death Squad John Negroponte has moved over to state where it's an open secret that Condi Rice has done such a disastrous job. It's the State Department is in shambles. So now all of our intelligence apparatus is operated by military people. And I think that that's, again, a setup for war. Bush is a guy who believes that the solution to all problems is killing people, is war. And all of his actions indicate that. And the only thing that he understands is force. He doesn't want to negotiate with the Iranians or the North Koreans or the Syrians because he frankly does not know how. I think it terrifies him. Jamie, I got to move along, but I appreciate the call. Tomas in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on WTKG. Hey, Tomas.
Hey, I have a quiz for you there, my brother. Name me an oil-rich country whose ruling majority are adherents to one of the more extreme anti-West branches of Islam.
No, that would be Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, or it could be Iran, or it could be Iraq.
If tomorrow
the shooting stops.
No, hang on just a second. The you're talking about the extreme forms of Islam. That would be Wahhabism. And the Wahhabists are primarily in control of Saudi Arabia, not any other country in the region.
But Shiites are an extreme form also.
No, they're not.
Well,
they are not.
They're the ones that flog their backs.
Yeah, well, okay. And in the Philippines at Easter time, you've got people who nail themselves to the crosses. The Shia Islam and Sunni Islam are just mainstream Islam. The virulent sect is within Sunni Islam, or has been historically, and that's the Wahhabists who started back in the 1930s in Saudi Arabia. And now on the Shia side, you've got Muqtada al-Sadr looking like maybe he's going to try to create something like that in the Shia side. But no, that's it. Ellen Ratner's with us with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen, what's happening in Washington, D.C.?
Well, there have been protesters that were taken out at the hearing today that Condoleezza Rice was at. There have been now Harry Reid took to the floor today. He denounced the Senate plan condemning Bush's plans for Iraq. And McConnell says that they may filibuster the Democratic bill to reject the surge. I mean, it's politics as usual back up on the Hill.
Yeah, but it's getting pretty hot. It's getting pretty hot. I mean, you've got Russ Feingold saying let's cut off the funding to the war.
Well, absolutely. And essentially also AP just came out with a poll that basically said 70% opposed sending more troops to Iraq. I mean, I don't know what Mr. Bush has to do to read the tea leaves, but clearly he's not doing it.
Yeah, I think this is political. I don't think this is military. And I think actually he may pull some. He's got Kissinger advising him, and he's doing the same thing Nixon did, and frankly Jerry Ford did. Let get Congress to cut off the funding by being outrageous,
and then
Congress take the blame.
Of Guantanamo.
Yes, yeah, amazing. Ellen, thank you.
Thank you.
TalkRadioNews.com, the website. You can get all kinds of great information and a lot of good audio clips over there as well. It's 57 minutes past the hour. We're going to talk to Greg Palast at the top of the hour, and we'll continue with your phone calls and what more about what we can do about this. How and don't forget, there are actions going on all over this country tonight. Go to AmericaSaysNo.org and find out where there's one near you. We'll be back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. Just a quick heads up. We had a caller earlier who said, the FISA court, wasn't it a FISA court that refused to allow the analysis of Moussaoui's computer? Note here from a reporter in San Jose. Dear Tom, I'm a journalist, 26 years in newspapers, two as a freelancer. Here are the facts about FISA and the 20th hijacker. The ABC movie Path to 9/11 miniseries fabricated the 20th hijacker warrant denial out of whole cloth. The film has a scene, cut from whole cloth, in which a FISA judge idiotically refuses to issue a warrant so investigators can look into 20th hijacker Zacharias Moussaoui's laptop. In fact, published wire service stories say it was the Bush politicized, think Michael Brown and FEMA, FBI's own lawyers who decided in early September 2001 that the evidence against Moussaoui was not strong enough to justify a search warrant, and the investigation stalled. So there you go. It's the sins of the ABC miniseries still coming back to haunt us. Greg Palast on the line with us. Speaking of the politicization and Michael Brown and FEMA, Greg, you've got a new DVD out.
Yeah, it's called The Big Easy to Big Empty. It's what really happened in New Orleans, how George Bush drowned New Orleans and continues to drown it. I mean, I was just getting the reports last night. It is grim. We've got Baghdad on the Mississippi down there. And that what the new film does is tell you exactly what they wouldn't tell you. For example, the head of evacuation for Louisiana said that the White House knew nearly a full day before they informed the state police that the levees were about to break. And you know, the hurricane missed, the Katrina missed New Orleans, so they stopped evacuating the last few people there. The White House knew the levees were breaking, that the city was going to drown, and I said, well, what happened because you didn't get the warnings? They said 1,500 people drowned.
Because the White House didn't say anything.
They withheld it, and the reason they withheld it is that it was a state problem until the federal levees break. It made the federal government responsible for evacuation and responsible for the damage for having used.
So they were trying to pass the buck.
Trying to wiggle out of the buck, and 1,500 people drowned. This is just some of the information, you know, the investigative.
That's
report.
Criminal.
Not going to get.
That's criminal.
Yeah, actually, we have a lawyer, city council in New Orleans, ex-city council, who said this is what people go to prison for. Yeah, it's criminal.
Here is one of many high crimes and misdemeanors that certainly are worthy of impeachment.
Just add it to the list, man.
Yeah. Oh, this is incredible.
You know, I mean, I hate to laugh about it, but you know, you got to, and of course, it's still going on. In fact, today, 125 families were evicted from houses that they rebuilt. You'll see in the film a group rebuilding, people taking control of their lives. There's an 84-year-old guy blind who was just evicted because the landlords are now getting federal FEMA money to put in new people. You know, so it's the scams go on. And you know, by the way, George Bush's cronies were paid over $500,000 to come up with an evacuation plan in case of a hurricane hitting New Orleans. That was in 2004, the year before the hurricane, and they never came up with the plan. In the film, you'll see me like marching their office saying, where's the plan? And they can't find, you know, maybe it's wet. And the reason they didn't have a plan is that they had no idea how to do a plan. Their total qualifications, as far as I could tell, George Bush's contractors, you know, the little local Halliburton there in Louisiana, was that they were major donors to the Republican Party. That was their experience.
That's why they got the $500,000.
That's why they got the contract. You know, I don't mind if they, it's bad enough to enrich themselves, but literally they didn't come up with what they were paid for.
Now, you know, in my opinion, what we saw in New Orleans and all up and down the Gulf Coast, actually, and what we're seeing in Iraq are two sides of the exact same coin. And that coin, it goes back to, frankly, Ronald Reagan. It goes back to this bizarre belief that all things government are wrong and evil, and that the so-called free market. I mean, this,
yeah.
Reagan's
well, and
this.
Bush is trying to prove that all things government are
well, and in certain way, he's succeeding. But here's Reagan. 8 seconds of Reagan.
I've always felt the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
And that's why, after they knocked down the government, after we had a successful invasion of Iraq, a war against Iraq, and Bush gets up on the aircraft carrier there and, you know, struts about and says, okay, you know, we've done it. It's, you know, the hostilities are over.
My fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
And at that point, they stopped because they didn't figure the government should have anything to do with rebuilding the damage that was done by dropping about, you know, hundreds of thousands of tons of bombs on a country. They just said, that's it. We'll let the free market take care of it. And it's the same thing in New Orleans, isn't it?
Yeah, well, actually, in fact, what happened in New Orleans is that, you know, normally hurricane evacuation is something that we expect the government to do, and it was in the hands of the state of Louisiana experts. The top hurricane experts in the planet are at LSU. They took it out of their hands and gave it to crony contractors. We know the scene. We know the story. And we just saw this in Iraq. I mean, you know, Bush, you know, had mission accomplished. Hostilities are over. Unfortunately, he forgot to check with the Shia militias if they thought the hostilities were over.
Yes.
Well, Al-Qaeda in Iraq. You know, I mean, and we see the same thing. In fact, I was just looking back at little George's promises to the American people in 2003, 48 hours before the tanks rolled, on March 17th, 2003. He had George saying that the terrorist threat to America and the world will be diminished the moment that Saddam Hussein is disarmed. And, you know, and now he's telling us that Al-Qaeda now has a home. This is a quote from last night. Al-Qaeda has a home in Anbar province, which would have never happened under Saddam Hussein, by the way.
No, Saddam Hussein hated Al-Qaeda.
Saddam did show that kind of government can work.
Yeah, well,
you know,
yeah.
In its own sick way.
Tragically. So, I'm curious, Greg, what, you know, first of all, I'm assuming maybe incorrectly that you've heard that we've invaded Iran, that we attacked the Iranian embassy in the city of Erbil in the Kurdistan area of northern Iraq. It took five Iranian hostages illegally. I mean, this is a clear violation of international law. Took down the flag, took their computers. The Kurds are protesting. The Iranians are protesting. We have essentially started an act of war against Iran already.
You know, you have to remember, for those of us old enough, by the way, and you just had Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
We had something called the hostage crisis when the Iranians invaded the U.S. embassy under the grounds that illegal activity, CIA, and after all, there were the CIA agents, et cetera, in spying on Iran. We don't even doubt it. The documents were there. The Iranians invaded the U.S. embassy. We said that was an act of war, an invasion of U.S. sovereign property. And now,
and we got the entire world to put them on a, you know, cut you off list, to boycott them.
It was evil and wrong to invade an agency. By the way, this is not the first time the Iranian, an Iranian embassy has been invaded. The first time was by Al-Qaeda, which invaded the Iranian embassy in Afghanistan, slaughtered everyone in the embassy. We are now doing Al-Qaeda's work. Remember, Al-Qaeda and Iran are at war. I mean, this is one of the subtleties here that obviously little George does not want you to understand.
Yeah.
This is Al-Qaeda's work. They love to go after the Iranians, and now we're shoulder to shoulder with the berserker in the cave.
Yeah, well, and the berserker in the cave is still in the cave.
Yeah.
So,
or wherever he is, and maybe in the Ritz. Carl's getting his feet massaged by a couple Barbies. You know, all he has to do is shave off his beard. The last thing that George wants to do is get Osama to say, to call as his first witness Donald Rumsfeld or Dick Cheney
He'd just do the same thing he did with Saddam. He'd execute him. Dead men tell no tales.
Let's not forget that.
Look at Ken Lay. I mean, the day Ken Lay starts negotiating for a plea bargain, all of a sudden he's dead.
Well, let's remember this one, too. When Saddam Hussein was executed just before the trial on the gassing of the Kurds, because someone might bring up the question, who gave him the go-ahead, who gave him the gas?
Right, and who gave him the maps and the intelligence?
Exactly.
And the whole thing.
Ronald Reagan's Assistant Secretary of Defense even told me that they gave the maps. Maps to Saddam Hussein to gas the Iranians.
We have about 20, 30 seconds left here, Greg. I'm curious what your take is on where we're what the future is going to bring.
You're a psychologist. We got here a war junkie. How do we take the needle out of stuff?
No, I'm a psychotherapist. I'm a little lower on the food chain.
Inject another 21,000 soldiers, you know. How do you, you know, he just says one more fix and I'll be okay.
Yeah, you're right.
You know,
he is behaving like an addict.
I think he needs therapy. But, you know, I think back this, you know, we don't even need new protest songs. I think back 4 decades to Pete Seeger singing about Vietnam. We're waist deep in the big muddy and the big fool says to push on.
Yeah, there you go. Well said, Greg Palast. Maybe George just needs to get laid. I don't know. It's anyway.
Way laid.
Yeah, way laid, for sure. Greg Palast, gregpalast.com, the website. You can check out his new CD about the Big Muddy. Greg, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour.
There is a house in New Orleans.
Or at least there was until Bush let them drown. Maybe it'll be the ruin of Bush. Who knows? Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, talking back to the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. 22 minutes past the hour here. See, it'd be 22 minutes past the hour, 2 o'clock on the East Coast, past the hour of 11 o'clock in the morning on the West Coast, and wherever you are in between, whatever it may be. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. By the way, I just checked out MoveOn.org, and they are organizing protests all across the United States as well. TrueMajority.org, there's a whole bunch of them. Tonight is the night to get out there and get active. Elizabeth in Savannah, Georgia, listening on radiopower.org. Hey, Elizabeth.
Hi. How are you?
I'm fine. What's up?
I just wanted to call because I just had another suggestion for reaching people that are ready to take action.
Okay.
But not listening to the program currently. You have mentioned before that you should talk to 10 people. Well, in addition to that, I think that we should write emails containing facts about this administration and give this information about how and why we should impeach this president to people by forwarding the email to everybody we know.
Yeah, good point.
So that not only that they can write letters to their senators, but they can call their senators and tell them to take legal action and have this information, you know, that echoes their beliefs.
Well done and well said. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. A great suggestion. Tom in Home, Washington. Hey, Tom.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for what you do.
Well, thank you for calling.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the so-called Yugoslavia solution to for Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
After the fall of the Soviet Union, Yugoslavia was sitting there, well-functioning socialist republic. They had nationalized industries and safety nets for the people, lots of ethnic diversity. The Fortune 500 couldn't see any way to make any real money off of Yugoslavia, and Bush 41 said we need to break it into 1,000 pieces or 100 pieces, whatever he said. And then the economic hitmen went in and lent them a bunch of money through the IMF and others, and then eventually pulled the rug out from under the economy, called in the debts. Concurrent with that, the CIA and others were in there stirring up ethnic tensions, and we ended up breaking Yugoslavia into pieces, which are now controlled by the, Yugoslavia is being taken advantage of by the Fortune 500. They no longer have their nationalized industries and so forth. So I'm submitting that maybe it looks like George Bush has done everything wrong, but he may be the sacrificial fool in this whole thing. He's created a situation where the only solution to Iraq is the Yugoslavia solution. What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't disagree entirely with your characterization of what happened in Yugoslavia. And not just Yugoslavia, by the way. It nearly happened in several of the other former Soviet republics, the so-called shock therapy. It nearly happened. Russia itself is reeling, still reeling, from listening to the advice of people like Wolfowitz and the World Bank guys. And, the whole, you know, economic hitman going in, sure. With regard to how this is going to shake out, I mean, I just don't know. The disaster is that
this law that is being drafted right now that apparently most people in the Iraqi parliament don't even know about. Well, they probably do by now because it's been reported in the last 2 days, that is going to give the oil companies the opportunity to go in and basically steal Iraq's oil. I mean, that's like the major thing that's coming out of all this. And so the bottom line is maybe George Bush isn't a sacrificial lamb. Maybe he's a really smart guy who put together exactly what was necessary for the economic interests of you know, the folks that to whom he answers and of whom he's a part. I mean, you got an oil man as president, so and as vice president. I don't know, Tom, but it's an interesting question. Jude in Seattle. Hey, Jude, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I went back yesterday. I think you were discussing about the amount of money that you thought Bush was going to give to Iraq to help with rebuilding.
Yeah, I was theorizing that he was going to do a Marshall Plan and that it would probably be money well spent and that might actually help out Iraq. And it turns out he says, the Iraqis themselves are going to give themselves $10 billion.
Exactly. Yeah, I picked up on that right away.
So bizarre.
I wanted just to bring two things real quick. There's two executive orders, and there's many of them, but two of them that were really quite concerning. The first one was 10995, which will allow the government to seize control over all communication media in the U.S. And the second one is 11002, and this one is curious because of the signing statement that was done in December. It designates the Postmaster General to create a register for all men, women, and children in the U.S., And under that, you can go into, it's under Part 6, Section 601, that they actually will be able to censor international mail, and which is a very clear...
These are both going all the way back to the ones that Nixon was pushing through. These are all in time of emergency presidential powers, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And the second one, I just want to put out really what's going on in the media right now is just one word. It's media apartheid. Thank you, Tom, for everything.
Yeah. Thank you, Jude. Interesting. Yeah, there's some truly spooky things out there. I remember when Nixon signed the executive order saying that he can suspend elections, and we were all just waiting for it to happen. Fortunately, it didn't, although he considered it. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
Simple-minded and the uninformed can be easily led astray. And those that cannot connect the dots, hey, look the other way. People believe what they want to believe when it makes no sense at all. And I wish you all along sideline and the strength to walk tall. Walk tall.
Yeah. It is clear that we need to change our strategy in Iraq.
It is clear that we need to change our strategy in Iraq, indeed. Welcome back, my friends. 35 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here, the place where reason is our lifestyle choice. The caller who raised the issue of Yugoslavia, I was thinking about that over the break, and let me share with you my now that I've had a chance to think about it thoughts on this. at the time I would, the bottom line typically is that a democracy can exist when you have a strong middle class. And that when you have rampant poverty, you will virtually never have a functioning democracy. Instead, what you will have is the equivalent of like local mafias. I mean, if you look at the poverty of the late 19th century in the big cities of the Northeast, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio made a movie about this, The Gangs of America, I think it was called. If you look at that kind of poverty, what it does is it brings out ethnic tensions. Neighborhoods become balkanized. Oh, it's the Italian neighborhood. It's the Irish neighborhood. It's the black neighborhood. It's the Hispanic neighborhood. And if you walk from one into another, you get killed. On the other hand, when all those people achieve middle class status, when there's security and safety with regard to housing and food and health care and retirement and putting their kids through school, when those fundamental needs are met, then all of that sectarian stuff goes away. And you've got African Americans and Italians and Irish and, you know, whatever. I mean, you got all these different ethnic groups living together in mixed neighborhoods. without fighting with each other, without threatening each other. And so what happened in Yugoslavia, what brought about the tensions, I would submit, was not so much, you know, that we, the CIA, went over and said, okay, we're going to start stirring things up, but rather that our shock therapy, this right-wing neocon idea of how an economy should be run, that a socialist state economy where the state literally owned all the businesses, immediately overnight was put out of business, and all those companies were nationalized, and most of those factories were shut down, and all these people who had pensions and security and job safety and good pay and free health care, it all vanished in the name of what, capitalism, democracy, something like that. I mean, and the result was poverty, and the result of that poverty was that people started saying, well, who made us poor? Must be them. Must be those Serbs over there. Must be those Croats over there. Must be those. And the them mentality emerged. And I would submit to you that ever since L. Paul Bremer rewrote the Iraqi Constitution and we destroyed the Iraqi economy and we did shock therapy to Iraq and we replaced the progressive income tax with a 15% flat tax and we did away with their social security system and we started cutting back on their food stamp programs and their housing assistance programs and we closed down 200 state-run industries and we shut down the army and laid off everybody in it and we did away with pensions and we started to privatize their health care system. Ever since we did that, we created massive widespread poverty in Iraq, and what happened? People started saying, it's them! I've got to protect mine! And the Shia and the Sunni, who were living side by side in the same neighborhoods in many cases, started looking at each other suspiciously. And so now we're to the point where we can do one of two things. We can do what we did in Yugoslavia, post-poverty, which is divided up and let them slowly build back up their middle class as separate nations. Or we can go in very quickly with a Marshall Plan kind of thing, like we did in Europe after World War II, and restore the middle class in Iraq. This is the point I was making the other day, where I said, you know, if George W. Bush wants to solve the problem that he has in Iraq, all he has to do is restore the middle class. And he should do it the way that Franklin Roosevelt did. He should create a WPA, he should create a CCC, he should put people back to work. The best anti-terror program is also the best anti-poverty program. It's called a job. Even if it's a make-work job from the government, it's a job. And that stimulates the economy to the point where there's now demand, which will cause entrepreneurs to come along and say, hey, there's people, they've got some money in their pocket, even though it's a make-work job from the government. They've got some money they want to spend, so I think I'll make a product to sell to them. And pretty soon you have a real economy going. So the problem is the failure of the middle class, or the loss, the death of the middle class. Elliot, driving in Connecticut. Hey, listening to WHMP. Hey, Elliot, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Tom. I'd like to go back to two things. An action that people can take, that Chris can take, way back the last hour.
Sure.
There's a website. I'm a member of the Progressive Democrats of America.
Mm-hmm.
The website, pdamerica.org.
That's the right action
that we're supporting and that we hope people will support is the petition, signing the petition online on our website to send the message to Congress to cut the funding for the war. And that's H.R. 4232. It's Jim McGovern's bill.
I'm all in favor of that. Broadly, I tend not to support people signing online petitions. Number one, because most politicians don't take them all that seriously. Number two, because I know Progressive Democrats of America is a great group, and that's not what you're all about. But there are a bunch of groups out there who are doing online petitions solely for one of two purposes. Either they want to drive up their number of web hits so that they'll make more money delivering ads to people, or they want to get people's names and emails for spam lists. And so, you know, I'd rather have people just call, literally call their member of Congress and talk to an actual human staffer, which is what Bernie Sanders recommends.
What I don't hear progressive talkers on the radio talking about is that bill, 4232, which the number is going to change probably, but the bill itself it's been in a tough fight for a year, and people don't really know it's out there because the debate is being framed by Biden and those that don't want to cut funding against you know, pro-war.
Right.
And that gets me to the framing issue, which you were getting at. There were many callers that were, it seems like every interspersed callers were really getting at the underlying framing necessity of this debate. It's not that he is delusional or mad or crazy or stupid versus that we're right. That keeps it in a sort of logistic strategic argument. The right wingers, Scarborough started, it laid the groundwork, and that might be to get rid of him, but they laid the groundwork. They used the word criminal, and they put that word out there.
Yeah, it was actually Gordon Smith of Oregon, who first used that.
He did that too, and Scarborough did it on his show. They used the word criminal as well as delusional. The point is, we should be just picking up on that and using and framing it from a criminal perspective. And the crime is that their motive isn't strategic or mad. Their motive, as you said, is a bit of a genius. It's profit, it's imperialism, it's war. We've got to hit that motive time and time again to dispel that he's just nuts and why can't we convince him argument.
Yeah, well said. There's a huge pile of money being made out there, and both by the in the oil industry and also in the war industry, and that's a huge pile of money that we need to call out. We need to point it out. You know, Dwight Eisenhower really did that well. Thank you very much, Elliot, for the call and for your comments on that. And it's just when Eisenhower pointed out that there was, this is, I believe it was his Cross of Iron speech, as I recall, when he actually called out, you know, this is what a destroyer costs. This is a world at war is not just spent. I think this is the speech. Here it is.
Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed.
And then he actually breaks it out and says, here's what the actual cost is.
This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children.
And here's now specifics.
The cost of one modern heavy bomber is this.
One modern heavy bomber is equivalent to
a modern brick school in more than 30 cities. It is two electric power plants, each serving a town of 60,000 population. It is two fine, fully equipped hospitals. It is some 50 miles of concrete pavement. We pay for a single fighter plane with 500,000 bushels of wheat. We pay for a single destroyer with new homes that could have housed more than 8,000 people. This is not a way of life at all, in any true sense. Under the cloud of threatening war, it is humanity hanging from a cross of iron.
Humanity hanging from a cross of iron. And that's this is the liberal Republican, Dwight Eisenhower, is a Republican president, telling us the cost of war. And I'm telling you, there's some war profiteers making a fortune. I said the trillion the other day. It's $1 billion. The CEOs of the major defense contractors have made since we declared this war. $1 billion in take-home pay. 46 million. Come on, baby. Before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Matt Holland is with us. He's with TrueMajority.org. I've been mentioning throughout the last couple of hours here, TrueMajority.org, AmericaSaysNo.org. There's a bunch of groups out here who are doing some really great work, and AmericaSaysNo.org organizing protests all across the United States tonight. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Tom. Good to be with you.
Great to have you with us. Tell us what you're doing, how it came about.
Well, this came about just about a week ago. We were having conversations with our friends at the Win Without War Coalition, which is a broad group of a whole bunch of mainstream groups around America that have been against this war from the beginning. We realized that the president seemed hell-bent on following this policy of more troops, and you know, having seen what happened in the past election, we knew that Americans were going to want to have an opportunity to respond to that, so we started putting together this protest event, give people a chance to get out into the street tonight with a sign, with a candle, with whatever way they want to express themselves, and say, no, this is exactly the opposite of what we all voted for during the last election. And so we spent a few days calling around, and every group we talked to was very excited to get on board because, you know, as anyone who reads the papers knows, the whole country is against this.
Yeah. Yeah, or the vast majority of the whole country anyway.
Yeah.
70% was the AP poll this morning, which is, mind-boggling. I mean, 70% of the country is opposed to it, and there's only a small minority in favor of it.
Well, especially that coming right after the president gives a speech. He gets primetime airtime to make his case, and the very next day, you know, three-quarters of the country says, no way, you didn't convince me.
Right. So where do people go, and how do they find out where to go?
The easiest thing to do is go to that webpage, americasaysno.org. There's a listing there of we're up to, at the last count, 575 events on that site in practically every state in the nation. They're going to be happening tonight. A few people have set up even events going on further on throughout the week. You just type in your zip code, and you can find one near you. And if by some chance one of those 575 events isn't near you, it's very simple to just say, okay, I'll host one. And hosting one just means you pick the street corner, print out the sign, and go there first.
Right. Okay. Well said. Matt, thank you very much, and thanks for the great work you guys are doing there.
Good thing. Thanks, Tom.
Good talking with you. Matt Holland with AmericaSaysNo.org and TrueMajority.org. Great, great work. Lawrence in Berkeley, California. Hey, Lawrence, listening on the Quake. What's on your mind today?
Yes, hi. I just wanted to talk about Yugoslavia.
Yeah.
If you want the smoking gun for Yugoslavia, go to the American Foreign Aid Bill in 1991. Because what it said was that the United States could not give any money to federal Yugoslavia, but would only give money, aid money, to individual republics which hadn't broken away yet, but which would break away to form independent countries. So the Foreign Aid Bill was encouraging these countries, you know, these...
Was this because Yugoslavia itself was still asserting socialism?
Yeah. To give you an example of why that happened, after this happened and after the successful breakaway, Croatia was supposed to be our ally against the Serbs,
right.
But Croatia...
And they were also Hitler's ally,
yes,
you know, just to put it in historical context.
Croatia wanted to privatize its socialized industries in favor of the collective of workers that were in each factory. In other words, they wanted to give give the factories to the workers. And the United States went before the World Trade Council and sued to prevent that from happening, and in fact successfully sued, so that the United States companies would be able to go in and do what they did in Russia and buy up these industries on pennies
right.
to the dollar.
Create the oligarchies.
Yeah. So you can't do that with a strong state, so they destroyed the state by breaking it up, and that's what happened. That's what created all of the mayhem and genocide in Yugoslavia.
Great.
The United States and also Germany were involved in that.
Yeah. Thank you, Lawrence, for the history lesson. I appreciate it, and for the filling in the blanks there. And again, it brings us back to the bottom line of without a middle class, you can't have democracy. Without democracy, you can't have a middle class. And if you're gonna create mass poverty, which is what these neocons do wherever they go, whether they do it with war in Iraq or whether they do it by shock therapy in Yugoslavia, the bottom line is that it's a human disaster. Mark in Florence, Oregon. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Tom. Morning to you. Tom, I have noticed ever since 9/11, basically, or shortly thereafter, that the main part of the mode of operation of this administration has been planned obsolescence, basically planned inefficiency, through that means of planned inefficiency, and that they achieve their objectives in this way. In the case of Iraq and the case of Katrina, this held true. I see the facts coming out of both happenings is being all planned ahead of time to fail, basically, in order for their agenda to succeed. It's a complex strategy. They actually left the borders open in Iraq. They left large munitions piles of live ammunition abandoned. So.
Oh, I know. It was in the press. It was like everybody was wondering, you know, what's the deal? Why are we not guarding this stuff? Because that's what all these IEDs that are blowing up our soldiers are being made from is the munitions that we chose not to guard.
Yes, this is given the intelligence and the experience of the people who planned this war, such as Rumsfeld on down. I think it can easily be assumed that this is an actual intentional inefficiency, and there's nothing else to assume about it, Tom. But their next move could well be another terrorist act in this country if we push them to the wall. And I hope that 9/11 can be exposed to perhaps prevent this. Yeah. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Mark. God forbid it should happen. But coming up tomorrow, Brunch with Bernie. Bernie Sanders will be with us. We'll be talking with a disability rights spokesperson about my take on Ashley, the pillow angel. That and more, and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program. Plus, of course, the top news of the day and our take on it, your take on it, your calls. And don't forget, my friends, activism begins with you. Get out there tonight. Get involved. AmericaSaysNo.org. Check it out. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.